December something. December the 7th. I don't know. 2017, probably. Maybe. I'm not really keeping track of what planet I'm on anymore. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out how rigged the game is, and noting that Cyberpunk Function had much cooler names for the corporations that took over the world. I'm Morps. Tonight, we have BSV. BSV, what are you drinking?
Sadly, water.
Well, depending on where you are, that could be worse for you than anything else. We have Static. Static, what are we drinking?
Water, but I'm also eating Death by Chocolate ice cream, so.
Well, that's a win.
Yes. It's very tasty.
And finally, we have Madman. Madman, what are we drinking?
You're not drinking alone, Morps. I have Outrageous.
Well, kind of. You're drinking beer. I'm actually drinking Four Roses Single Barrel.
I'm drinking whiskey made from oats.
Outrageous? I was thinking the wrong thing. I was thinking, okay, nice.
You're thinking an oatmeal stout.
Yes, I was. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, hell, that tells you how much I'm not paying attention to the world anymore. I don't even know the brand names of all the whiskeys.
The brand is Corsair. That's just the name of the stuff.
Okay, yeah, I know that one. We toured that factory, actually. Distillery. It was the distillery, not the brewery. We did not see them making the work.
Oh, yeah, the brewery is a little further south, which is still decent driving range for a tour.
Yeah. Yeah, probably would be now that I think about it. Anyways, one of these days, I'm going to work up a new intro for the show. We've been using that one for, 5 years. With the Pac-Man? Well, I mean, I've been using the Pac-Man since from day one, haven't I?
Yeah. I don't know about the Pac-Man sound, but you've been using that same song ever since Patient Zero said you could use it.
That's true.
He wrote it for you.
Well, he did a remix for us. I don't know that it... Well, he may have originally written it. I don't remember, to be honest. I haven't talked to him in a long time either. Is Tack still alive? Does anybody know?
I heard through RU that he is still alive, slightly less SJW than he was. Still not to what I would consider normal.
Well,
but
nobody's gonna
no one's
normal.
Ever normal.
Yeah. Well, no, wait. You've been talking to RU?
No. Last time I talked to RU.
Great disappearance.
Well, at this point, we're assuming the ninjas won. So, I mean...
Oh, I think one of the many venomous things in his homeland have eaten him. I'm thinking a flock of platypi.
Is that what it's called? Is platypi a flock?
That's what the hell I'm going to call it. They have duck bills.
I'm thinking it'd be a murder of platypi for some reason. I don't know.
That's crows.
I know that's crows, but I was thinking it would apply too. I mean,
they're venomous mammals. I don't think herd works, and I don't know what you call a bunch of beavers. Other than possibly a lesbian convention.
Beat me to it, damn it. That's where I was like, do I want to make the joke? Oh, hell. All right, well, let's get into it here. First article I have is from the BBC, and is the reason I want to talk about this is not maybe the most immediate annoyance, which is, you know, I happen to use a Fire Stick to watch movies and shit, and that's so. Anyways, let's see. Google plans to stop Amazon's Fire TV streaming devices being able to use YouTube at the start of 2018. The search giant has also blocked a workaround that Amazon introduced to restore YouTube access to a screen-based version of its smart speaker. Experts say the steps mark an escalation in a business row, which consumers have been caught up in the fallout. Amazon had previously stopped selling several of Google's hardware products. It removed the latest Nest-branded smart home kit, including a home security system and a new version of its thermostat, from its online stores last March. Since 2015, Amazon has refused to sell Google's Chromecast video and audio streaming dongles. The latest development coincides with the release of Amazon's Prime Video app for the Apple TV. Its absence has previously put Apple's set-top box at a disadvantage to Amazon's Fire TV lineup. Lack of reciprocity. Fire TV owners have reported that trying to watch YouTube clips now prompts an alert telling them that they'll lose functionality on the 1st of January. They've been trying to reach an agreement with Amazon to give consumers access to each other's products and services, said Google said in a statement. But Amazon does not carry products like Chromecast and Google Home and doesn't make Prime Video available for Google Cast users. And last month stopped selling some of Nest's latest products. Given this lack of reciprocity, we're no longer supporting YouTube on Echo Show and Fire TV. We hope we can reach an agreement to resolve these issues soon. Google had stopped Amazon's Echo Show speakers being able to play YouTube videos in September on the basis that the retailer had altered the way the software worked. The version Amazon presented had lacked Next video recommendations, subscription, and other features, but these were restored in November when Amazon made the device present a more normal view of YouTube. According to TechCrunch, the search firm believes that its rights have still been violated because Amazon continues to overlay its own voice controls. Amazon has responded saying Echo Show and Fire TV now display a standard web view of YouTube.com and point customers directly to YouTube's existing website. Google is setting a disappointing precedent by selectively blocking customer access to an open website. We hope to resolve this with Google as soon as possible. Dispute disadvantages consumers in two ways. You should be unable to access a service that Amazon devices had promised to deliver, and Amazon's refusal to allow even third parties to sell certain Google products via its site makes it harder to find them at the lowest price. It's a surprising turn of events. YouTube's all about maximizing the number of people, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, horrible, horrible, bad for consumers. So, yeah, that's annoying that if I want to keep watching YouTube on that TV, I might need to figure out a different way to do it. I mean, I've got like 30 other things I could hook up to the TV to do it, so it's not like it's a big deal, but it's a little annoying. And but it's not the first time, but it's one of the most notable examples of what should be a roughly general purpose computing device being restricted because you backed the wrong corporate team.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this has always been the fear with things like the various phones and well, I mean, this was the fear with computers back when they first started introducing secure the secure brain function, the freaking TPM chip that they were going to block functionality. Of course, Apple's kind of always done this, right, with the Mac, but they try to wall garden with the iPhone and the Mac, but not really. On a Mac, you can still go run whatever you want. You just have to kind of disable the protections first. Of course, iPhone, you have to jailbreak. But, you know, it should be a roughly open platform, right? Because, I mean, a Fire Stick is basically running Android. And Google is actively blocking because you're running the wrong company's device. There's literally no technical reason the device is going to stop serving YouTube. It's not, I mean, there's no technical reason to do it. It's purely corporate warfare. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this.
I haven't played with the Fire Stick. Is it actually kind of an open-based computer, or has it always been somewhat, here are the apps to watch your TV show?
It's been presented as here's the apps to watch your TV show, but you can run Android apps on it. When they launched it, they worked with a bunch of Android people to port games to it because it's still running Android under the hood. One of the most popular things to do with the Fire Stick was to sideload other Android apps, Kodi and Plex being the two big ones. So a lot of people who do home media libraries will use a Fire Stick because they can load Kodi or Plex on it and get that to work quite well. And for a long time, it worked a hell of a lot better than trying to hack up a Raspberry or a Chromecast to do it. So, you know, they've got kind of an install base in that regard. That and, you know, Amazon's video service is pretty decent, but it also does Netflix and things like that. So as far as a decent TV stick, it was a good all-around one. So, and I've not used a Roku, so maybe a Roku's better. I don't know.
Roku's are okay. I don't know if we have sideloading them, but I haven't. I also haven't really looked very close.
Yeah,
but it comes with everything preloaded.
Yeah, and in fact, I have an older Fire box that, until the audio died on it, I had sideloaded Kodi and a bunch of other shit on it, and it worked fine. The actual audio on the thing died. Like, you can't get audio out of the box now. I think part of the chipset went out. So I never threw it away because it's like still got something of a decent processor in it. So it's like one of these days I'll figure out something to do with it. But and I've got a Stream, what's that thing called? The Stream Link. When they went on sale for like $15, I bought one. It's sitting on the desk over there. I never actually hooked the damned thing up, so maybe I'll hook that up and use it instead, you know? So it's not a big deal to me, but it's not like, it's not like your phone won't run the latest version of the software, which is what usually happens with cell phones. Or, well, actually, I guess with most cell phones, it's the manufacturer doesn't bother to put out the latest update, isn't it? But, and, you know, Apple's kind of bad about not supporting the newer stuff on the older hardware. But this isn't even new software in the hardware. They're just blocking it because Google doesn't like Amazon. And it's literally corporate warfare. So what happens next time, I don't know, Microsoft gets in a tizzy fit with Facebook? Are they going to block Facebook on Windows? I mean, all technical reasons that would be annoying aside. I mean, could, you know, or okay, yeah. I mean, Microsoft offers a bunch of different services, right? Along with, I guess, Gmail. So, yeah, Google and Microsoft is what happens if Microsoft blocks Google and you have, you know, because they offer Office 365. Like, no, you have to use Office 365. You can't use Google Docs. Or vice versa. What if Google blocks, like, on Chrome browser or, you know, the Chromebooks, you from going to Office 365? That's a competing product to, you know, Google Docs and Gmail. I mean, admittedly, Apple's been doing this kind of crap with the iPhone and the iPad stuff for a while, but it's not been as obnoxious as actively blocking something that was working.
Like it this. Is annoying, but when you're sideloading, that's not going through actual Amazon to upload whatever they're saying should be on the stick. You're just doing that yourself because you can.
Yeah, that's just grabbing an APK and dropping it on there.
Amazon's always been selling this as, this is a closed system. We're only going to let the things we want on it.
Yeah,
YouTube's
through
free.
Through their app store.
We'll throw that on there.
Well, they actually advertise it as being able to watch YouTube.
Yeah. And now Amazon, from what I'm seeing in this article, kicked this off by saying, okay, all these Google products that are competing with our Fire Stick, we're not going to sell. So this already limited computer that you bought, manufacturer's like, okay, well, we're no longer going to support this thing that isn't a general purpose computer anyway.
That's true, it's not.
It sucks, but I'm not thinking it sucks on the terms of Google being abusive. I think it's crap because YouTube isn't, all the stuff on YouTube isn't designed by Google. It's people throwing it out there through Google's service in an attempt to get money. So you're hurting the content creators on YouTube more than you're hurting Google by restricting this.
Well, I guess it kind of goes back to Stallman being right in that these aren't really open systems. They're kind of open-ish systems, you know what I mean?
Well, the Fire Stick is a closed system with an easy workaround.
Well, it is, but they have, I mean, people can submit to the Amazon App Store just like they could for their tablets, and you know, it's the same apps as like a Google Play because it's all still Android. So they've always kind of promoted it as a open-ish system because, you know, people could do third-party apps. So.
And
but
now Google's
right.
Just pulling their third-party app from their store.
Yeah. Well, that's it's not so much that, because I think Amazon actually maintained the app because all it's doing is displaying Google's web page or YouTube's TV view web page, which you can pull it up on a browser. And it's the same view. I forget the URL off the top of my head, but it's fairly easy to find. And Like I said, it's more obnoxious than anything, but I'm wondering if this is going to be the trend. That's okay. Yeah, this individual example is obnoxious, but it's not damaging or a big deal. I'm wondering if this trend continues, are we going to see this kind of bullshit where you're punished from using or you're not allowed to use a service because you picked the wrong company for a platform? Whereas technically there's no reason you couldn't, because it's all built on more open standards, you know, web-based standards. Am I not making a good argument? I'm just saying,
when Amazon started saying you can't sell your crap, I don't see why Google would say, well, you can still use our content to sell your crap. That's Google's kind of reprisal. Now, I do think this is going to end up being kind of bad if a lot of companies do it. But in this particular example,
oh, I'm not saying they don't have the right to. Yeah. I'm not saying they don't have the right to do it. They're private companies. They have the right to do whatever they want with their services, right? I'm not arguing that. I'm arguing it's obnoxious and sets a bad precedent.
It may be an argument for doing general purpose having a general purpose computer for your media box.
Well, that certainly wouldn't be the first time, would it?
Oh, no, I'm actually running a cord to my living room for my general purpose computer that's a media box.
But just like Marv said, though, what if Windows starts blocking stuff? Or I think that'd be a little harder in this case.
Yeah,
I'm playing a slippery slope.
I'm playing a slippery slope argument. Absolutely, I don't deny that. But you're right, though. I mean, what if this kind of thing gets more obnoxious and starts happening more often?
Well, with an OS blocking it, you're now crippling my computer that I bought as a general purpose computer. Now, if Nintendo says the Wii that they designed for video games can't stream YouTube anymore, it sucks. But I bought that for Nintendo games, not for watching YouTube.
So I have a fundamental disagreement with you right there, Medben. I don't care what you sold it to me as a function to do. If I own that hardware and I can make it do something, I should be allowed to do that.
To support you doing it. So if you can make it show up on YouTube, even though I've pulled YouTube from all my Nintendo crap, good for you. But don't expect Nintendo to support something that they didn't sell it for you for that purpose.
True, but I don't like them going back and crippling it after the fact because they decided they didn't like somebody doing something.
Like what the Sony did with
Sony
the PlayStation,
did didn't they? Yeah, because the PlayStation, was it the 3 or was it 2?
I think it was 3.
Could originally run Linux when they first sold it, and then they took that functionality out because they decided they didn't want people doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, I got Linux to run on an Xbox, for God's sake. It wasn't very good, but I got it to work.
Oh, it works great.
No. You're talking about the modified stuff. I'm talking about I actually got a full-on freaking Linux desktop to run on an Xbox. The hacked-up version of the LXDE environment sitting on top of a Debian kernel, but I got it to run. Didn't run very well. The thing only had 32 some odd mega RAM, but I mean, it ran. So,
well, I look at it this way, though. YouTube sells subscription service as well.
Sure.
So let's go past the free side of things. They are limiting their market, and they are actually hurting those people who have bought YouTube Red subscriptions, because they would no longer be able to use that device to be able to watch that.
So I guess that's the question. Do they expect people to be loyal enough to the YouTube platform to actually go purchase a different device to continue to use it, or are people going to be more loyal to the device they bought and just switch over to using something else instead of YouTube?
Kind of comes down to what's actually on YouTube Red worth watching.
Well, I looked at it before and I decided nothing. There's nothing on YouTube Red I was interested in. The only aspect of YouTube Red I was interested in was that they said they were going to remove ads. But every review of it I've read said that they don't actually remove ads. They just, instead of doing ads for whatever product or service, their ads for shit on YouTube Red, like other shows. And it's like, well, fuck that. I'll just keep using ad blocker then. Thanks. I mean, like, I wouldn't have cared to pay for it to get rid of the ads just to be less obnoxious, so I didn't have to run a hacked DNS server to, you know, make some of these devices perform a little bit better. But that's Pi-hole, by the way. I know I've talked about it on Decking before. That's a fantastic product, and I think they just put a new version out. So, yeah, you don't have to run it on a Raspberry Pi either. It's just a script for quickly setting up a DNS server that pulls in some nice block lists. Anyways,
I know just about everything I watch on YouTube that's posted on other sites in addition to YouTube. I just go there because it's centralized.
Yeah, but regardless of that, if someone has a reason that they wanted YouTube Red and they bought it, now Google has decided that they're blocking it for Amazon devices, so now they are essentially blocking that person's access. I think that's wrong.
Demand a refund.
That'd be interesting if there were a number of Red users who said, I only watch on my Fire or whatever, and I'm canceling my subscription because you just blocked me and I want my last month refunded because you're keeping me from using. Well, they haven't done it yet. They're saying it's going to happen January 1 next year. So that's time enough to cancel your renewal, so I can see why they're doing it that way. So, yeah, and that might be why you're getting the warning message.
And the other side of that that's interesting is you said you were getting the warning message on yours. I'm not getting it on mine. I checked it last night.
You're still not getting it?
Nope.
No, every time I launch YouTube on mine, it comes up and says, you know, YouTube will be blocked on January 1, 2018.
What version of the OS? Because maybe they're only blocking it on the newest version of the OS, and if you just don't upgrade,
that's what
you're
I'm
fine.
Thinking.
I don't know. Because I don't manually upgrade it. I think I just left auto-updating on the thing because I didn't really care.
No, is the warning just only in the new version?
The YouTube app, yeah. Well, I don't see how it couldn't be, though, because what the YouTube app is actually doing is it's just displaying a web browser and going straight to the YouTube web interface. And just translating the remote into key presses.
Well, these Fire Sticks are running a specific version of Android. So maybe
Google is
looking for that version of Android. And if you're not using that version of Android, they think, okay, this is generic crap. It can go through.
Yeah.
Have you sideloaded Kodi on yours?
Not on my current one. I did on my old box, but like I said, it doesn't work anymore.
Okay, because I have Kodi on mine working. I wonder if that might be
well,
it.
Apparently, Cycros is saying in the chat is saying Kodi on Fire Stick works. So,
yeah, it does.
Yeah, so I've no doubt that it does. I just haven't sideloaded this particular box, and I'm. Fun thing is, exposed framework on a rooted Android gets you YouTube Red for free. Huh. Okay.
Yep.
Well, I haven't played with that, so I haven't rooted my latest phones in a while. So I just haven't had needed it.
At any rate, the second thing I had this mentioned, has anybody gone to Amazon and searched for a Google Chromecast and see all the generic dongle stuff that are out there? It's kind of funny looking.
No,
well, that's
what
I'm thinking. You just go on Banggood and go buy whatever Chinese thing with a decent processor in it, right?
Right.
Because that's all it's going to be is it's going to be a side-loaded, either it's going to be a really crappy version of a Windows desktop or it's going to be a side-loaded Android anyways. So, yeah, I mean, that might be the thing, is you go with a generic device or agnostic device, because they're saying, like, they're not going to block Roku. So, yeah, I guess this is the problem with the corporate giants controlling a lot of things, is when the two corporations go at it, you kind of get stuck if you're using one or the other.
Oh, I'm looking forward, since Amazon offers a streaming service, are they going to go after Netflix or Hulu? Because those are the other big ones, aren't they?
Netflix is a selling point of the Fire Sticks. They say that it'll do Netflix, and in fact, when you're browsing through the Fire Stick interface, Netflix shows pop up in the interface. So, like, you click a thing, it'll launch Netflix to go watch that video. So they're working with Netflix. So I don't know.
Well, I think one big thing is Netflix is just we're moving into being a TV network. throw us on all of your shit. And we're
I think
just
Netflix
put out
hosts a
thing.
Hell of a lot of their shit on Amazon AWS anyway, so there might be some other agreements between those two companies. But, oh, well, so we'll just keep watching for more of this corporate warfare shit. And I you know, going and getting generic hardware and just loading open operating systems on it might be the way to go.
If it moves into OS wars, that's when I'm going to flip my shit. Because Windows, I stuck it on here to do what the fuck I want it to do. If they start saying you can't use whatever, I'm like, fuck that. You're an OS.
Well, actually, Linux kind of gets the reverse of that, but go ahead.
I was going to say, but the same thing is it can be said, though, about the Amazon box as well.
Well, there is a difference. Whenever you're buying an OS, it is for running a general-purpose computer, and they kind of market it that way. The Roku, the Fire TV, they're not marketing you can load whatever you want on it. It's just you can load whatever you want on it if you know how. And one reason they don't market it that way is because of Kodi. If they market it, you can load whatever you want and we support that, they're also liable for you pirating shit.
Yeah, everybody going nuts over those Kodi boxes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the general premise of what you just said, I bought it for a specific purpose. So they should not have, you know, any say.
Well, again, I don't like the idea that they're coming back after the fact, you know, and saying, oh, you can't do something anymore.
Right. Exactly. If it was from the beginning that, you know, if they said, oh, well, you can get to Amazon, Hulu, Netflix, but you can't get to YouTube, you know, and a lot of stuff at the very beginning when all these devices were coming out, certain ones wouldn't do
certain things, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
That was one of the reasons I went with the Fire Stick or the Firebox early on, static, because you told me it does all of them. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So that's why I went with it.
Same reason I got it.
Yeah, because early on, like, the Roku wouldn't do half the stuff, and they didn't work very well. And, you know, I have a Chromecast kicking around in a box somewhere, but it was kind of a pain in the ass.
Oh,
so,
it's worthless.
You know, now I've got the little Dex thing for my phone, so I could hook up the Dex desktop to my phone and get a long-ass HDMI cord if I wanted. Or a wireless keyboard and mouse would actually probably work just as well. Just pop my phone on the TV. But, I mean, so it's not like you're hurting for options. And most of these little TV dongles are $30. So if Amazon is counting on an investment, well, the Fire boxes and the Apple TVs are a lot more expensive than that. So I guess if these guys are counting on you being loyal to a particular piece of hardware when most of them are fairly cheap, that's kind of stupid. So, but yeah, when we start seeing, I think you know, if we do start seeing the operating system wars, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, you're not using a Google-based operating system. You can't use Google services. I don't know what that will do, because on the one hand, you're cutting yourself out from market share. But and to Madman's point, they sell these things as appliances, not as computers. But a lot of people have played the game of trying to turn computers into appliances. So what does that do? And again, I don't like this idea that, well, I sold it to you as a video player, so I'm going to cripple anything that's on it that I don't like you doing. I kind of feel like once you've sold it, you've sold it. It's, what did you actually buy? I bought a processor on a stick that connects to an HDMI port. Your software happens to be nice. I mean, you know.
Yep. And Amazon's not the one crippling it, so even the manufacturer on this isn't the one doing it.
That's also true. That's true. That's a different service just deciding they don't want to support that device anymore for asshat reasons.
And I'm not even supporting it. It's actively blocking it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I don't have an issue with you not supporting something, because that's your labor. So if you don't want to put the labor into it, I can't force you. But if you're actively breaking it, then you're putting labor towards me that I don't want.
Yeah. I think it's dumb that YouTube is blocking. Yes, but I also think that it's dumb that Amazon won't have you know, Chromecast devices being sold on their platform. I think that's stupid too.
Well, and, you know, like we said, that is their choice. But you're right. I mean, it's kind of dumb. Especially
but you can buy Apple TV, you can buy Roku, you can buy any of them. Only you cannot buy a Chromecast. Yeah. So they're specifically targeting Google. Exactly.
That's why Google's shitting on them. Or trying
this is why Google's doing it. They're trying to get attention.
I think it will get resolved, but
I think it's going to backfire on both these companies, making both look like asshats.
Yep. You watch. A lot of people will probably start going to something like a Roku or a Apple TV and say, forget it.
Well, I was actually thinking about 3D printing up a case for like a Raspi. Or I've got a couple of Media Center PCs that I was using for other things, but one of them's currently not doing anything. It'd be fairly easy to load up a nice Kodi box on that, you know. So, or just, you know, put Kodi on the Fire Stick and do it that way. I mean, it doesn't matter. So, I don't know. I just, it gets old, you know what I mean? And it's, yeah. Anyways, so I'm not encouraging one thing or the other. It's more just kind of pointing and laughing at the asshattery. Let's move on here. Next article is from the Guru of 3D, but it's all over the place. NiceHash, a famous mining pool for Bitcoin, seems to have been hacked, according to online data. A good $56 million U.S. dollars worth of Bitcoin seems to have disappeared overnight. And this says, well, unconfirmed, but they got a letter from the CEO of NiceHash. It seems 4,700 Bitcoin has gone missing, and all of the NiceHash pools are offline. NiceHash is one of the more popular solutions thanks to an easy interface and its usability. By downloading a small application, I was going to play with this one too. I'm glad I didn't, but I was planning on it. By downloading a small application associated with your Bitcoin address, you're good to go. Users mentioned their wallets have been emptied and that Bitcoins are now in a wallet that received 4,736 Bitcoins on Wednesday. Currently, that entails a total value of 51 million euros or 56 million U.S. dollars. And that's when this was written. How old is this? This was written yesterday, and Bitcoin is up to $17,000, and yesterday it was at $15,000. So it's more than that now? Oh, shit. The service has been showing a mysterious maintenance notification the entire day already, according to some rumors coming from expert users of the pool and blogger. Steemit mentioned it's possible that NiceHash has been the victim of the biggest hacks ever. The main address of NiceHash shows that the zeroing in the early morning of the total. So somebody got in NiceHash, got control of the wallets, and dumped everything they could. The CEO of NiceHash has posted the following and confirms the website has indeed been compromised. Unfortunately, there has been a security breach involving the NiceHash website. We are currently investigating the nature of the incident. As a result, we are stopping all our operations for the next 24 hours. Importantly, our payment system was compromised and the contents of the NiceHash Bitcoin wallet have been stolen. We are working to verify the precise number of Bitcoin taken. Clearly, this is a matter of deep concern.
Yeah,
millions of dollars. Bankrupt. It's a matter of deep concern. And we are working hard to rectify the matter. How? In the coming days. How are you going to do that? You don't. Your company does not have the money to cover that loss. In addition to undertaking our investigation, the incident has been reported to the relevant authorities and law enforcement. We are cooperating with them as a matter of urgency. We are fully committed to restoring the NiceHash service with the highest security measures in the earliest opportunity. We would not exist without our devoted buyers and miners all around the globe. We understand that you will have a lot of questions. We ask for patience and understanding while we investigate the causes and find the appropriate solutions for the future of the service. We will endeavor to update you at regular intervals. While the full scope of what happened not yet known, we recommend as a precaution that you at least change all your online passwords. We are truly sorry for any inconvenience, blah, 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 blah. So, actually, I haven't looked at the site lately. NiceHash. Let's
it
just go to
the also be time to change your checking account info or your PayPal info.
Yeah, it's not even loading. You're right. Oh, here it is. Service unavailable. There's the letter I just read. So, in other words, we don't know what the hell just happened.
Depending on where you go, we said 4,200 plus.
That was
right?
That was on the article I read from 3D, the Guru 3D there. Yeah.
So roughly somewhere around 72 million at this point.
Oh man. I don't know how they're going to cover that. I don't unless they're the ones who stole it. I think that was a joke we were making earlier.
I bet
earlier.
You they did.
They're just grabbing the money and running.
If you go from the NiceHash Facebook, they have a video update 6 hours ago.
Cycross, I don't think you could. The nature of the cryptocurrency is so volatile right now. I don't know how you could. I know I've made like $300 off Bitcoin going up in the last month. I mean, it's like shit. So,
yeah, there's not going to be an insurance company willing to insure you.
Oh, they did post a video. Okay, update from the NiceHash team. And it's 6 minutes long, and I'm not going to play that in the middle of the show, but I will watch it later. But yeah, thank you all for watching. Cannot release more information performing thorough investigation. Okay, that's true. So for anybody who's getting mad at them for not talking, their lawyers tell them that. That's not their fault for not disclosing information. Both law enforcement and their lawyers tell them to shut the hell up.
Oh, yeah, law enforcement because they're trying to catch the criminals. The lawyers because these guys are technically right now possibly criminals.
Yeah, so they're taking the right approach of trying to get their facts straight before they start throwing things out there. But, yeah. Boy, I'm glad I didn't get much farther than looking at the NiceHash website and doing some reading. Because, man.
Your $300 profit would disappear?
Well, I've been using Coinbase, so. But that's all I've been using, really, is Coinbase and a few other experiments on the side. But I've only been doing play money. Like, I haven't put any... I know a few people who put real money in Bitcoin, and, you know, based on the timing of when they did it, it's not bad. But I know some other people who put a significant chunk of their savings in there and have done very well because it's just skyrocketed.
At, like, the $1,000, and then now it's worth $16. Hell of a return.
No, I did not, Psychros. I in fact got most of my Bitcoin Cash because most of my Bitcoin was not actually in Coinbase at the time because I knew they weren't going to pay out. I had them in actually EOBOT at the time because that was the quickest place to put them. So I did get most of my Bitcoin Cash. So I didn't have as much Bitcoin at the time though because I had actually pulled some value out. Because I thought it was going to top out at $5,000. It's like, no, this isn't. I mean, I was wrong. Oh, man, was I wrong. I don't even, I actually made a decent amount playing the currency exchanges, too, trying to ride the up and down. And for a while there, that was working. But lately, just because it's been shooting up like mad, it's just like, it's not even worth trying to trade it. Just hold it. So.
Yeah, they haven't found the biggest idiot yet. Not sure when they'll find it. I'm thinking around the 25,000 mark.
Hey, if you think that's the right call, I mean, I'm willing to sit on it till it hits that. Because, damn.
Oh, if the biggest idiot happens there, you want to sell it around 24.
Well, I know, but I'm... Madman, you understand financial markets better than I do, because I said I was playing around with crypto trading. I turned $50 into $200. And then took 50, and then left 50 in, took 150 out, and I've turned that into, what's this game currently sitting at? 270? Where'd it go? Yeah, 272. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's fantastic for the couple of months I've been playing with it compared to anything else, but with people who knew what they were doing with Bitcoin, they're laughing at me because I could have done a lot better. Like I said, I pulled a bunch out thinking it was at the peak and I only left a little bit in there. It's like, well, if I'm wrong, I can lose $50, right? And, yeah. Yeah, Monero's doubled. So, Psychros talked about Monero as building strength. There's no real value tied up in these things. It's all speculation. I don't know how it...
It's a bubble.
I'm trusting... And Madman, you understand financial markets way better than I do, because I went back and looked at the history. It's like, I made a little bit. I could have made a lot.
Oh, yeah. You can make tons of money riding a bubble, but you just don't want to be the biggest idiot, because that's the person that bought in just as the bubble's popping.
So what are we basing our prediction of 25,000 on?
Oh, that's literally a number I pulled out of my ass.
Oh, okay, well, we're not actually making investment advice on that, then.
Oh, yeah, don't make investment advice on that. That was literally a number pulled out of my ass. There's not a way of determining when it's going to pop, because Bitcoin, one, doesn't really have that much of a history. Yeah, it's got history as far as cryptocurrencies go, but it has no history as far as a commodity or a currency exchange goes. It's exceptionally volatile. It's not any trusted value, and it's not going to have any form of discernible value, possibly ever.
Psychros, do you mean McAfee the company or McAfee the man?
Oh, please say McAfee the crazy man. I love that guy.
He's great.
I would have voted for him for president.
He makes great IT videos.
He really does. The man. And the man. Awesome. Awesome. Nice. So, I don't know. I just, that's going to be a thing, is that hacking servers and just stealing cryptocurrency because it's worth so much right now is that's going to be a continuing issue. So, if you do control a significant amount of cryptocurrency, and I'll be honest, I do not consider what I have in cryptocurrency significant, which is why I'm leaving it in Coinbase and kind of playing with it from there at the moment. And EOBOT and some other service I was playing with. Bitrex was the other one I was playing around with. But either you want to find one of these guys that's insured, FDIC-style insured, which I don't know of any banks that let you hold Bitcoin right now. Or you want to do your own insurance, build up a nice system to hold it on, preferably something that you can air gap when you're not connecting to the network, and put the wallet on there. And hold it yourself, because setting up, holding a Bitcoin wallet yourself is actually not that hard. You just run the client and let it sync up to the network, and be aware it's going to have a couple of gigabytes of blockchain that it has to sync up. I don't remember what the blockchain size is actually up to. Let's Google that real quick. Bitcoin blockchain size. What's that up to? Reaches 100 gig. Oh, it is. Okay, it's at 100 gig. So you need a hard drive.
I don't know if you can insure it against loss. Maybe able to hedge it, though, if it drops in value.
I'm not talking about dropping in value. I'm talking about not losing control of your Bitcoin wallet.
Yeah, there's not an insurance company that's going to do
that. Yeah. So if you have a significant amount of Bitcoin that you're not going to be playing with, you want to store, I would consider getting you a machine that you could set up to hold, so you need at least 100 gig of storage on the thing, because you need to store the blockchain. And actually, there are offline wallets. I need to look this up. You can buy those hardware wallets. They're a couple $100. Maybe that's the way to go. That they sell those hardware wallets. I was thinking you might set up a wallet on a machine that you would then, like a laptop that you could shut down and put in the closet. So, although with the Intel Management Engine bugs, it's there's no guarantee that the thing just being off is actually going to protect it, especially with a Wi-Fi card. Huh. So you're going to buy a cheapy laptop, take the Wi-Fi card out of it, get the blockchain on there, boot it once a month to sync it up. This isn't going to turn into quite an operation. Maybe just buy one of those hardware wallets. Might be worth the $200 those things cost. BSV, you've been quiet. What do you think?
Don't know. Haven't really played with Bitcoin, and as for securing it, I have no clue. I don't know much about the subject other than trying to invest in it is very crazy right now.
I think as far as insuring and making it more secure, once the NASDAQ starts trading in its futures, you'll get some insurance companies willing to.
I wonder if that's why it's starting to shoot up way high, because that's going to be in a couple of months, I think, or next month, maybe?
I've heard announcements that they're looking into it. I haven't heard as of this date, we will sell futures.
NASDAQ, Bitcoin. Yeah, it's futures, because we talked about it. Actually, we talked about it on the last decking. NASDAQ article one day ago, Bitcoin futures, Bitcoin investment trust stock chart. Here it is. This is when you can start trading Bitcoin futures. That's a video. Some bitch. I clicked on a link and it took. So the link on the search engine doesn't go to the article. It goes. It just gets redirected to their news page. Here we go. U.S. commodity trader, blah blah blah. CME's contract will start trading December 18th. Oh wow, that's in a couple of weeks.
That's a couple of weeks. 11 days.
So okay, in 11. That's why the price is surging up. Crypto kitties. No, Psychros, I didn't. I saw you posting something about that the other day. I haven't looked at it. What is Crypto Kitties? So, copy. He sent me a link. CryptoKitties.co. What is Crypto Kitties? Collectible, breedable, adorable, collect and breed digital cats. A game centered around collectible Crypto Kitties. Did they make a game? Are these blockchain Beanie Babies?
Yes.
Digital Beanie Babies on the blockchains. It's logged on Ethereum. Oh my god.
Okay, time to check out of that.
And
catch you guys later. Wow.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Yeah.
They've sold for over $100,000. Okay, I'm willing to acknowledge that Bitcoin might be the modern day Beanie Baby, but holy crap! Wow. Oh man. You know what? That's enough of beating that horse. Rocket Snail. Reuters. EU and urges internet companies to do more to remove extremist content. Did I throw that link in the chat room?
Yes.
Awesome. Internet groups such as Facebook, Google's YouTube, and Twitter need to do more to stem the proliferation of extremist content on their platforms, the European Commission said after a meeting on Wednesday. Social media companies have significantly boosted their resources to take down violent and extremist content as soon as it's posted in response to growing political pressure from European governments. You know, governments that are used to being able to tell people to shut the fuck up because they don't have the freedom of speech, particularly those hit by militant attacks in recent years. But Julian King, EU Security Commissioner, said that while a lot of progress has been made, additional efforts are needed. We are not there yet. Where's my dramatic sound? I'm going to need it. Okay. We are not there yet. We are 2 years down the road in this journey to reach our final destination. We now need to speed up our work, King said in his closing speech to the third meeting of the EU Internet Forum, which brings together the Commission, EU member states, law enforcement, and technology companies. The EU said it would come forward with legislation next year if it is not satisfied with the progress made by tech companies in removing extremist content. Passing laws of Facebook doesn't censor enough. While German online hate speech law comes into effect on January 1, the Commission is keen to avoid a patchwork of national law on the issue and favors a self-regulatory approach. That is because the Commission is probably receiving tons of campaign donations from the various companies and their lobbyists. Over the summer, Microsoft, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube formed a global working group to combine their efforts in removing extremist content from their platforms, and last year formed a database of known terrorist images and videos, which now contain more than 40,000 hashes or digital signatures. No definition of what makes it a terrorist image. Just, you know, we've said this is a terrorist image, and so now it's hash.
My main thing for hearing this is, can they define extremist content?
That'd be fantastic, wouldn't it?
I just wanted a definition of extremist groups, because there is a definition of terrorism. You're using violence to promote a political agenda. So, if I blow up an abortion clinic to stop abortions and to push push laws to ban abortion, I'm a terrorist. I'm using violence for a political goal. So that's already been defined.
I'm just thinking because they're working with hashes on videos and images, if you go change like a pixel in the lower right-hand corner from black to really dark blue, that's going to change the hash while not fundamentally altering
There are workarounds. The content of the video, they'll just have to continuously look for it. My issue is, if with this is possibly, I want them to list who they consider an extremist group or a terrorist group. Because,
what prevents them from defining political ideologies they just don't agree with?
Judicial Watch is considered a terrorist group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Judicial Watch just files FOIA requests. That's all they do. File FOIA requests to get information from the government on whatever the government's doing. Now, I know that's a U.S. comparison, but I can't think of anything in the EU.
Probably one of the more extreme examples of it, but yeah.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, members of the Internet Forum presented a report with updates on progress made by companies and Europol in detecting and removing extremist online content. The report, reviewed by Reuters, encourages companies to remove new and historical terrorist content to develop solutions to identify and remove terrorist content within 1 to 2 hours of upload, and to the extent it is technically feasible without compromising human rights and fundamental freedoms. They're asking for a unicorn. They want that filter based on intent.
Well, as far as rights, they can repost something that they mistakenly taken down. I just want a if they put in, blanking on the term, an appeals process, then you're fine. But I can see you don't really need to post the video of all of those guys being lined up in Libya and beheaded, so that the blood of Christians will wash over to Italy as a prelude to them going to kill the Pope. That's not an image that needs to be out there.
That's a very specific example.
That's a terrorist video that I know exists.
No, I'm just saying, that's a very specific example. But, you know, this whole, it has to be removed within 1 to 2 hours thing, or we're going to write a law. I mean, they're asking for a unicorn. They don't understand what they're asking for. I can say upon reporting,
review it. Maybe, but that would be expensive.
You would have to pay armies of interns to sit there and review videos. And at that point, it's editorial. You are no longer protected by DMCA Free Harbor. You cannot say, I don't know what was posted because we're just running a service here. You're going to require... Oh, okay. The reason I have this article is because I think where it's ultimately going is the government wants to have government censors review everything that's ever posted online. At least in Europe, that's what they want. They want yes or no, they want veto power over anything posted online that they disagree with. I mean, extremist content is easy. It's the same as the kiddie porn argument, right? It's like, oh, we need internet censorship because otherwise people will post child porn. Well, child porn's already illegal. Whether just because it's digital doesn't really make that much of a difference. So, you know, terrorist acts are illegal, and video and pictures of them are documentation of a crime. This whole you have to remove it within so many minutes, or you know you're in trouble. It's bullshit. It's they want censorship. And
okay,
you know,
so let's stop a second.
Go ahead. Okay.
Couple things. One, the article does not say, at least the one that you linked, does not say that they have to remove it in 1 to 2 hours or they're in trouble, or it says something that they're going to create a law. It says that it is encouraging companies to remove new historical terrorist content and to develop solutions to identify and remove terrorist content within 1 to 2 hours of upload to the extent it is technically feasible without compromising human rights and fundamental freedoms.
Well, and that's the part that I'm calling a unicorn.
I understand that, but ISIS, okay, we'll use ISIS as the example, right?
Okay.
We all know ISIS is extremist terrorist group,
they're bad.
Right?
Bad
yes.
Guys.
Bad people.
They're cartoon bad guys.
That's social right. Media is their number one way of recruitment. Period.
Fair enough.
Okay. So, if we can remove them and their access to social media, number one, they're not going to get as many new recruits. Number two, they're not going to get copycats. That is one of the biggest issues, I think, that we have with violence within these extremist groups. Let's look at the Black Lives Matters people, you know, the marching and the tantrums that they're throwing, right? At the end of the day, there's a lot of copycat happening because of that.
Sure.
So why not remove it? It doesn't need to be there.
Well, and if Facebook wants to, they can certainly do that. I guess the part that galls me is they're like, oh, well, if you're not working towards this, we're just going to write a law. That's the part I don't much care for. I mean, if these companies want to work with the EU government and come up with this kind of stuff, that's on them. That's fine. They can do that. I just, you know, this you will work with us or we'll pass laws anyways is the bullshit I don't like. Because you're right. ISIS is bad. We should be trying, you know, we're actively trying to kill them. We're sending military people over there to kill them. So that's, you know, I get that.
I just want them to have a list of
what's considered extremist. They never define it. ISIS is the easy example. Well, what about alt-right people you don't agree with, but oh no, they're all racist. You know, you saw what happened in
Charlottesville. Yeah,
thank you. Yeah, it's like the moment they can define anything as a racist group or an extremist group, like Madman was putting out, Southern Poverty Law Center, you can use it as censorship, and that. You know, we talk about logical fallacy of the slippery slope, but we're not dealing with a logical system. We're dealing with people.
Well, you can actually see whether they've committed a terrorist act. The reason I use the Southern Poverty Law Center is because they list people on their terrorist group that haven't committed a terrorist act. Now, the KKK, we can say they haven't done anything in a while. I haven't actually looked. They may have done something recently. They have committed acts of terror. So if they're on that list, that's good. But I just want, instead of saying extremist, I want to say list of extremist groups we know and the list there.
A better definition than just the word.
ISIS, they are a group, and they take credit for their shit. So yeah, if you find someone posting ISIS videos, I'm completely awesome with Twitter removing it, because I don't think Twitter does it right now. Facebook, I think they've been trying.
Twitter does if it's reported to them, okay. But they don't make an active effort. But you're right, Facebook does. So, and if Facebook wants to do that, I'm fine with Facebook doing that because they want to. It's this threat of we'll pass a law anyways that galls me.
Well, there's already kind of laws, at least in the states, on this. You can't give aid or comfort to the enemy, and if you're assisting them in recruiting, that's aid.
Well, then you have to weigh the Free Harbor stuff and all that. So I mean, you end up in law in court anyways. But and you're right. But that aid and abetting thing predates social media. This is the EU saying, you know, these companies will cooperate with us on getting this crap off the internet, or we will write a law, and that bothers me. Because we're going to get our way either way. It's just whether or not we write a law. Which, granted, is the point of government, but I don't like it. I don't like them doing that.
I'm fine with laws. I just want them to be decently written, and government's terrible about that. That's why I want them to define, here is the terrorist group. This is their act. Anyone promoting this will pull that off. So Hamas, Hezbollah, I'm sorry they're all Islamic, but unfortunately that's the world. No, I'm not sorry. That's the world we live in. Antifa.
Zach, you want to get a last word in before we go to the next one?
You all enjoyed this last episode because we'll be on that extremist list.
Probably the case.
Well, we just won't be in the EU then.
Oh, dude, the reason I was on that shit list.
There's a reason we don't use YouTube. I you know, remember back we used to have people saying, hey, you should put this on YouTube. Hey, you should put this up on SoundCloud. Yeah, there's a reason we don't.
Yeah, I want to pull up and see if the few episodes that made it to YouTube are still there.
I think, was it Psychros or was it Juver? Somebody did that. Actually recorded the IRC as we were doing the show and posted the whole thing to YouTube. I don't have enough activity in the IRC for it to be crazy interesting, but... And I don't like the idea of doing the whole, I think it was Chris Perillo who used to do that. He was just doing an audio podcast that had a camera on him the whole time with a chat feed going. I don't want to do the camera thing. It's like, nobody cares about me. Like, what do you want to see? Me sitting here, you know, staring at a computer screen? Really? That's kind of boring.
And scary.
Well, you know, we're not, no accounting for taste. But, yeah, it's like, it was not him? Okay. Maybe it was Juver who did that. Somebody did that. But yeah, there's a couple of them that did make it up to YouTube. Because I was amazed when Madman sent me a link to one of them. I was like, wait, what? So. All right. Next article is from ZDNet. The U.S. government does not need the approval of its secret surveillance court to ask a tech company to build an encryption backdoor. The government made its remarks. I guess that's true. You don't need an approval of court just to ask for anything. The government made its remarks in July in response to questions posed by Senator Ron Wyden, but they were only made public this weekend. The implication is the government can use its legal authority to secretly ask a U.S.-based company for technical assistance, such as building an encryption backdoor into a product, but can petition the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court to compel the company if it refuses. So they can ask, but if the company says no, they have to go back to the FISA court. Okay.
I don't think FISA has jurisdiction over a U.S. company.
And the answer the government said it is not to date needed to ask the FISA court to issue an order to compel a company to backdoor or weaken encryption. The government would not say, however, if it's ever asked a company to add an encryption backdoor. Well, that means they have. The spokesperson for the Director of National Intelligence declined to comment. Government relies on Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to carry out the bulk of its intelligence gathering and surveillance options. Section 702 has long been seen as the crown jewels of the intelligence community's legal power. Under one application of the powers, the government appears to assert the authority to demand a tech company deliberately bypass encryption on one of its products. Last year, the FBI sought a court order, albeit under a different legal statute, to force Apple to alter software on a dead terrorist's iPhone to encrypt the data. Blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, there's not really much here. They're just saying, yeah, we can ask, and then if you say no, we can go back to the court and try to get an order to compel. Yeah. Thoughts? Anybody care?
I think FISA is the wrong court.
What court should it be?
Well, if you're asking for, I don't know, Google, whatever district court Google's home office is in, or if you're going with smartphones, where is Apple Incorporated? Go to that U.S. district court. Because FISA is just foreign intelligence, and it's also kind of stupid because you don't need a warrant to spy on aliens.
So Static found the episode of Decking on YouTube. It was posted by Matron TM. In 2013, God, we've been doing this a long time, and they put this big Creative Commons logo on the front of it. And Pure Decking is Creative Commons. I don't think I've ever said it's not, and we used to even say that on the webpage somewhere. That's interesting. Okay. Morp's in his round table. I don't think it's really a round table. It's more of just kind of a oblong.
It's a pipeline.
It's a pipeline. So, I mean, because, you know, I've got some dump buttons if it comes to it, right? So, let's see. Where was I?
We were discussing the FISA court.
Well, was there anything else to say on that other than just, they've acknowledged that, yes, they can ask?
Yeah, I'm not even sure why we needed to acknowledge that. The government can ask for anything. They just can't compel you without a warrant.
And they even said they still have to go back to the court to compel. So I think I misread the article when I was putting the notes together earlier, and that's why I had it in there. Next one up is from securityboulevard.com. The U.S. Army has announced its pilot program to directly commission civilians as cyber operations officers to close its launching or is close to launching. Lieutenant General Paul Nakasone, commander of the U.S. Army Cyber Command, said the pilot program was approved October 27th. The Army will begin selecting officers in a few months. Specifically, the Army is looking to address shortfalls and add specialized technical skills to its cyber mission force as rapidly as possible in a program that closely mirrors those for the medical, legal, and seminary fields. Currently, the Army is looking to fill 14 specific roles and skills, but Major General Pacifica Frost, Director of Cyber in the Office of the Deputy Chief of Staff, said additional high-tech skills that apply or can be applied to cybersecurity would also be considered. We're looking for innovative people, she said. Applicants must be U.S. citizens, younger than 41 years old. They must also have at least a four-year college degree, be able to pass an Army physical, and be able to meet the requirements for a top security clearance. Applications can be filled out and submitted online. The 14 skills are computer scientists, software engineers, security engineers, DevOps engineers, data scientists, machine learning engineers, full-stack engineers, reverse engineers. I don't think they know what half of these things are. Seven front-end software engineers, site reliability engineers, because in every company I've worked, you've got like two or three people doing all this shit. product managers, hardware engineers, network engineers, field operations specialists, software development engineering, test, and software designers. Benefits are substantial, but may not be competitive with what top talent makes in the commercial sector now. According to the GoArmy.com site, second lieutenants earn a starting salary of $35,000 a year, but some pay items are available. Frost noted civilian positions are also open for these fields, which may generate a higher salary. Applicants can fill out the same application for either the Army or civilian roles. Face-to-face interview process, we make sure that the talented applicants end up in the best place for them. Most recruit training would be in schools at Fort Still, Oklahoma, Fort Gordon, Georgia, and is only open to commissioned officers. Required a total of 8 years of service, followed by U.S. Army. Okay, so they're trying to recruit civilians into officer positions, but it sounds like they're not going to pay them anywhere near what you make in the private sector, especially for DevOps engineers, full stack engineers. Security engineers, you're going to tempt them with $35,000 a year? Fucking really? Good luck. Not to mention, half the people in the security field can't pass a drug background test, so...
I wonder what the pay add-ons they can do. Because I know they'd give different bonuses based on what you're going in for. I know someone that went in as an optometrist and she got a decent...
Well, I'm just wondering if they're going to come in and, you know, $35,000 and you're serving the country. It's like, that's not going to sway hardly any of the people who work in that field. I'm sorry. I mean, if they wanted to join the Army, they would have already done it.
Yeah, but...
And they looked at a lieutenant, their officer positions. They could be more than that. The one I was talking about, she went in as a captain.
Go ahead, Static.
Well, not only that. So... Okay, I don't know who wrote this. Security Boulevard, whoever they are, don't really care. But
are they wrong? Just tell me they're wrong. It's fine.
The premise of how they wrote it is wrong.
Okay.
There you go. Because they're saying, well, yeah, if you go to GoArmy.com site and look at second lieutenants and they earn $35,000 a year, that doesn't mean that's what they're going to pay for these positions.
Yeah, a second lieutenant infantry is different than a second lieutenant in.
Fuck yeah!
I think it's interesting that they're recruiting from the private sector at this point.
That part is interesting. I agree with that, but that's not unheard of. I mean, you know, civilians have had you know, contract positions with the government military for years, and it works out very well.
But. Build up to a World War One or Two, a bunch of our Navy, they walked into shipyards and said, "Hey guys, I know you were working on a cargo ship. Do you want something that fires like 4-ton shells 8 miles and blows the shit out of crap? We need some people to operate those."
There you go.
So this happens whenever there's a shortage in manpower.
So I guess. You know, okay, other than the article coming out and saying the base pay, whatever. Because, I mean, okay, I'm adding the emphasis on the base pay. That's true. But I'm basing it off this article. And this article, they didn't add that emphasis. They just said, well, that's kind of starting, so you're probably right. Because there's no way you're going to compete. You know.
So, yeah. So if you actually go back to the site and you look at a civilian job, telecommunications engineer. That's the closest thing I can really find.
Sure.
Total salary $71,278.
Okay, and that's actually competitive for that.
Yeah. So. You even up to you know, within the Army itself, so a Signal Corps officer is making $83,000 a year.
And and Cycros is even pointing out that if you get brought in as an officer, you might get to live on base. So, that pay may not even be that bad.
Yeah, you get housing allowance, food allowance, all that stuff. Absolutely. Yeah.
On top of
your salaries, your salary's tax-free. So, yeah.
And if you spend 20 years, that salary's yours until you die.
Yep. So,
I think it's a good thing. I do find that it is funny looking at the list and some of the roles. It's like the big thing here is to really understand that less and less of our little millennial pieces of shit kids are not actually going to the military. They're sitting at home, mommy and daddy's taking care of them, and they're up in arms about all these little unfair things. So, anyways.
Well, I mean, if I couldn't have gotten a job in the field, you know, when I did, I probably would have gone military. I mean, I didn't want to because I didn't want to get shot at. And you can say that's cowardly. That's fine. I don't care. But, the honest truth, I didn't want to get shot at. So,
buck up, buttercup.
Yeah, that's about the response I expected. But, you know, I mean, if I couldn't have gotten a job, I probably would have done it.
And that's fair enough. I mean, you know, I think in our generation, there's a lot more people that were willing to invest in their long-term career by serving their country. Whereas, like I said, now, I don't know what the actual percentage is, but I would venture to say probably less than a quarter of the percent of graduates are looking at military.
Oh, I'm sure. Because you know, I'm fully admitted, I'm totally mercenary about it. It's like, why am I working where I'm working? Because they pay me well. It's not any loyalty to the company, a little bit of the challenge just because of some of the stuff going on there, but really, it's mercenary. It's money. Yep. So, you know, if the government came out and said, we'll give you, you know, $200,000 a year to come do it for us instead, see ya.
One thing I think would help out the military, and part of the problem, I think schools have been bucking them. ROTC's been going down. Schools have been making it harder for them to step in.
Agree 100%.
And one thing that I think the military would be good at is a paid trade school. So if you start picking up kids in high school, it's like, we're going to train you to be whatever we need. Here's the list of what we need. Pick what you want. We'll pay for it. You serve your country, and you learn to be a software engineer.
Yeah, well, that's usually how the military does things, isn't it?
They've tried, and they still do try that. I know a few people that have gotten doctorates going through the military, but
I mean,
a lot of people aren't looking into it, and schools aren't letting them on campus as much, so it's hard for them to advertise to millennials.
I mean, I know a few people who paid for school through military. You know, one went through the Navy, and I've actually got a couple of people I work with now who are in the reserves, and they, you know, they're in the reserves, but they're working a regular job, and you know, that's because the military paid for their school. So, you know, I don't know, but I don't know. We given our prison population, we probably ought to go back to a convict system. I wouldn't mix them with the regular soldiers because that could end badly. But I mean, you know, instead of building prisons, just, you know.
Nah.
No? Is that a little much?
That's a bit. I think there's honor in patriotism and in military service. I don't think it should be forced. But I think we should make the option more widely known. A lot of people, whenever you go to a career fair at a high school or a college fair, you have colleges there. Military services aren't as represented, and if people don't see it, they don't go that route.
Well, yeah, because they don't know what the options are, and I mean, hell, it's not like I ever walked into a recruiting office and even fairly compared it, because like I just said, it would have been my last resort if I couldn't have gotten a job, right? So.
Yeah, that's my regret. I think they would have sent me to a fat farm, and I'd be better off for it.
Well, I mean, under 41, they'll still do it, I'm sure. It's like, why are you joining the army? Because I'm fat and I don't think I can do it on my own.
I need somebody to threaten me with prison and beat me daily to exercise.
They'd probably say, right this way. Anybody else want to touch this before we move on to the next article? Because it got dark there.
Rocket Snail.
Rocket Snail. All right. Next article is from Detroit at CBS Local.
Oh, yes. Please say the article itself is on fire.
No, but it's pretty funny. Ann Arbor, it's from Ann Arbor, a 27-year-old man who was able to take over the Washington County computer systems with malware and other tricks has pleaded guilty in federal court. Prosecutors say Condres Vatois executed a classic phishing scheme using both email and phone calls to county employees to gain access and control the computer network. Upon gaining access, Vatois took the information of many former and present county employees while also altering jail records in an attempt to free one inmate early. Jail employees noticed the edit and prevented the early release. In other words, the computer system was saying, yeah, you know, Bob Smith over here, he served his time, free to go. We brought him in yesterday. What the fuck?
But I did the whole prison thing. They even said on my face and everything.
Washtenaw County, which employs more than 1,600 workers, spent more than $230,000 to fix the breach. Voits, who lives in Yipstani Township, pleaded guilty Friday to damaging a protected computer, a federal crime. He could face 7 years or more in prison, plus a $250,000 fine when sentenced on April the 5th. He's in jail without bond. Computer hackers should realize that unlawfully entering another computer will result in a felony conviction and a prison sentence. Hit the button. Play! Set up some kind of controller for the soundboard. Acting U.S. United States Attorney Daniel Lichtman said in a statement, FBI first encountered Voits in 2015 when he reported a false bomb threat. I love that he was actually in the prison networks trying to be like, yeah, no, he served his time. I love that. So, I don't know. Thoughts on this guy? I just think it's hilarious.
So, how long do you think it'll be till he tries to hack the system of the prison he's in?
Well, that depends on whether or not they give him access to a computer. Sometimes when you're convicted of computer crimes, it's like, oh, you're trying to go in the computer lab? No, you're not allowed in there.
They'll just smuggle one in.
Just smuggle one in. It's like, what'd you do? I stuck a raspberry up my butt. He keistered it. It's both a Raspberry Pi and a shiv, because you can fit them in anything these days.
Dude, did you see that story? Inmates actually did that.
What, snuck computers in?
No, they were as part of a recycling program, a bunch of just material was being shipped to a prison for sorting.
Uh-huh.
And they were getting old computers. So when they were scrapping these things, they were pocketing components. And they built a prison network.
I don't remember
like
this.
Multiple machines and got them on the actual prison network.
And that's awesome.
They didn't breach like their prison records to get them out. They started doing financial scams.
God.
They got busted with like 2-point-something million bucks in different offshore accounts.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was amazing. I'll have to track that down. I mean, it's not current news, but it's still an amazing thing that happened.
I remember reading, I remember saying, I think we've done some decking stories about people in prison with computers, but I don't remember that one. So, anyways, I think it's time for this. Yo! Hadouken! All right, after the incredibly racist intro to Digital Dojo, and we're keeping that because I think it's funny. So I've got two things for you. Speaking of scamming people for millions of dollars, the first one is a project called Mailsploit. So Mailsploit is a collection of bugs in email clients that allow effectively spoofing the sender and doing code injection attacks. The attack is not detected by most email servers, and therefore the spoofing protection doesn't work. Bugs were found in over 30 applications, including Apple Mail on looks like all of their operating systems, Mozilla Thunderbird, various Microsoft email clients, Yahoo Mail, Proton Mail, and others. In addition to the spoofing vulnerability, some tested applications also proved to be vulnerable to cross-site scripting and code injection. And so it's all packaged up. It's all this code already for fucking with people via email in ways that haven't worked for years. But, you know, they've got example here of doing code injection to Hushmail. They've got, you know, different spoofing. So it's all done in the name of research. But, yeah, you can, you know, they've got a whole list in the Google Docs of affected companies and vendors and how to exploit all of it. So there's that. So actually, this goes back to a conversation I had with some people at work. They asked us, could we stop doing phishing testing because they're making people think that the network is insecure. And it's like, I want them to think the network's insecure. Well, no, because then they think we're not doing our job. No. We're doing our job when they treat the network like it's insecure. Because I don't want them to just trust random shit they get in email. That's asking for problems. That's asking for bad things to happen.
I haven't been fishing in a while. I kind of missed that.
I was kind of hoping you were saying we didn't do any phishing schemes tested.
The what? You want us to stop doing what now? We're not doing that. That would be a pretty funny response. It's like, could you stop doing your phishing campaigns? What phishing campaigns? I like it. I don't know. Anybody else have any thoughts on this? It's a neat project. Just all kinds of ways to spoof email, which, I mean, granted, that's never going away, but... I mean, surely everybody else shares the same hatred for email that I do.
It's horrible.
I mostly ignore it, so no, I don't have a hatred for it. I mean, it barely exists in my world.
You don't get asked to fix it all the fucking time either, probably, do you?
Oh, no, I do get instant messages from my bosses on, you read that email I sent you?
Nope.
The answer's probably not, but what did you need me to do?
Yeah. I've suggested blocking email a couple of times. People laugh. They think I'm joking. I don't know why. Probably like when I'm...
Does a lot of your internal departments get outside email?
Yes.
Because my email, it's generally... I mean, they still do phishing tests because it's possible for me to do it. Oh, damn it. I don't care.
Okay. Moving on. Damn it, now I gotta go edit the damn recording. Anyways.
Wow.
Last thing I have for Digital Dojo is a project called Slurp. And this is a project written in Go that attempts to locate public S3 buckets. It enumerates S3 buckets manually or via a search stream. So it's based off the idea of another project, which is a Python project called Bucket Stream, which watches the open SSL certificate lists, where the different people where you can register SSL certs publish lists of the certs that are registered, the URLs that are registered as SSL certs. The idea with these lists is that you can watch and see if somebody just published an SSL cert for your website. So people are watching that and then going out and checking to see whether or not they're S3 buckets. Because people put things in S3 buckets they shouldn't. See, say, the Verizon vulnerability a couple of months back. So this is a way of finding them. And it's a neat little program just for watching this shit in real time or manually. You can, like, throw domains at it and see if they're hosted on S3 buckets. Because usually once you find an S3 bucket, it's fairly easy to start enumerating. And kill the Cycros Lucid. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't help what goes out on the live stream, right, man? But so it's written in Go and has no dependency problems. It's got a manual mode, so you can throw individual domains at it and see if there are S3 buckets. So, but yeah, you can just have it sit there watching the search streams and tell you when new S3 buckets come up, and you can go check them and see if they're, public or not, and what you can do with them. So, yeah, it's an interesting project, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, there's three buckets. Amazon sells data stores that they call buckets that you just throw files in, and they can be publicly accessible. People even host websites out of them fairly regularly. And sometimes things end up in them, or the public the permissions that are in them are just, you know, wrong.
Terrible.
Yeah, the default permissions on S3 buckets for years was public. So every file you threw in, it got a URL, and people didn't realize that. So you would find really sensitive internal documents sitting out there in public S3 buckets because somebody didn't realize what they were sharing. Sort of like the old, you know, home folders getting shared across Apache because somebody wasn't paying attention to how they set up a web server. So, anyways, it's a script watch for that. I think it's cool, and I think it's hilarious because I have my reasons for having strong dislike for S3 buckets. You know, developers lie about what they're going to put in those. Just saying. Anyways, that's all I've really got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, and the IRC. Reading the IRC list tonight, we've got myself, Cykros, Cyberlard. Cykros is in there twice. What? Oh, I see what I did. Don't scroll the thing where you're trying to read the list. So myself, Sardonyx, Cyberlard, Cykros, Iron Angel, Low-Tech, and Medman are on the IRC tonight. Speaking of, BSV, closing thoughts.
Just looking forward to the future where you have to choose your sole provider of good hardware, software, and services.
Well, you'll work for that company as well, and you'll get paid in Amazon bucks, or, well, whatever. The company
store.
Can I
get paid in douche coin?
I want to get paid in douche coin. There you go. Not Dogecoin, douche coin. Madman, closing thoughts.
I think the media fight will really ramp up after Disney buys Fox. They're buying 20th Century Fox.
That'll end well.
Fox is splitting off its news and sports division, and it's going to be separate and stay with Fox. But
well, it would kind of have to, wouldn't it? Disney doesn't want Fox News.
Probably. But the TV and movie division, Disney's gobbling it up.
So that means Disney's going to own Family Guy.
Not only that, but they're going to own the rights to the X-Men. They might be on it. Oh, kid, damn it. It's too late for them to get into the Infinity War.
All right, Static, closing thoughts.
We're all extremists.
All right, that's all I've got. I'm going to play the Pac-Man sound now.